really just trying to find out what they're looking for, what they're hoping to get out of this. There's some that are kind of on the fence of, do I want to be married? There's that question of, I'm not totally sure. We're trying to figure out maybe co-parenting and all. You and I know that that's obviously got to take us down a different track of how we don't go into the deeper work or the real vulnerable kind of trust fall type territory when we're hearing some of those things.
Welcome to Everything is Clinical, a podcast for mental health clinicians. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Jackie Dunnigan, a licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm also an AAMFT approved supervisor. And I do believe that when it comes to the therapy room, everything is clinical. I hope you get as much value out of listening to these discussions with various seasoned professionals as I did in having them. Today, Dustin Ellis is with us. Dustin is a licensed marriage and family therapist. We are going to talk today about, should I recommend couples therapy to my client, and maybe some things to look out for if couples therapy even might not be appropriate, or the different types of couples therapy. Dustin works in private practice with Grow Counseling in a couple different offices now, right, Dustin?
Yes, that's right.
I'm in Suwannee, Alpharetta, and Marietta.
Do you mind just kind of sharing a little bit about your practice and what your areas of expertise are?
Sure. Primarily, I would say I'm a couples therapist, but not all of my caseload is couples. I do a lot of individual men, section working with things like perfectionism, motivation, adult ADHD, and autism symptoms. I also work with families. So it's pretty evenly split between kind of couples and kind of individual men, typically.
So we're going to jump in a little bit today. We're both couples therapists. We also both work with individuals, but we're going to talk about what clinicians should consider when recommending couples therapy or recommending that their clients start couples therapy. I think couples therapy is so beneficial for so many people. And then there are a few exceptions where you should really consider, is it the best thing for your client? So let's jump in a little bit about that. And when you are meeting or you get a call from a client, what are some of the things that you're looking at, that you're assessing to determine where to go or if to go into couples therapy?
I guess pretty simply right off the bat, it's kind of what are they looking for? You know, are they kind of on the fence with couples therapy or individual? But if they kind of leaned into the couple side of things as much as I can and try to get some indicators of coming from the emotionally focused therapy kind of lens, I'm looking for those patterns that's of kind of how they interact and what's coming into my room. That way I kind of have some kind of idea of not only what they're looking for, but how to support that, because there's some moves that I make that are different depending on those patterns. And so, you know, really just trying to find out what they're looking for, what they're hoping to get out of this. There's some that are kind of on the fence of, do I want to be married? There's that question of, I'm not totally sure. We're trying to figure out maybe co-parenting and all. You and I know that that's obviously got to take us down a different track of how we don't go into the deeper work or the real vulnerable kind of trust fall type territory when we're hearing some of those things. Those are kind of on the high level things that I'm looking for. And then from there, once they come in, there's different assessments that I use.
Right. And, you know, I could just start there as well. And like you, I use both EFT and Gottman therapy, but neither one of those are to be used unless the couples are wanting both to enrich the relationship, because it's very, very vulnerable. So I hear you saying exactly what I do is we're looking for, is this a space where they're both wanting to repair or enrich the relationship? And is it going to be emotionally safe to move forward with couples therapy? You mentioned a couple of things in there about somebody might be on the fence if they want to stay in the relationship. And I think oftentimes individual clinicians, this is when they may recommend a couples therapist. What are your thoughts? Where do you go with that?
I usually, when I first meet the couple, I'll usually meet them together, see them individually. And that's a place where we can assess further if we need to, and then usually back together as a couple. And that's when we make recommendations. Then we kind of know, okay, this person's leaning out. They're not really into it. they're not going to be committed to really going there, and it's not going to be safe for the other person to get real vulnerable and go to those places and be abandoned in the office or left with a trust fall where they're not being caught, you know. So that's when I'll make those recommendations of going more of the kind of the discernment route, or if they're already out the door, if I get the sense that they're just not interested in working it out, or they're kind of on the fence, those are things that I'm looking for. I don't necessarily try to get them to share that in that first initial couple session. But I think for somebody referring, if someone's saying that they're not sure that they're wanting to stay married, you know, then if they were to refer them for a couples therapist, that can be a helpful thing to know up front, because then we just kind of jump right into some more of the discernment work, right? Or I don't have to assess quite as much if I know we're going there first.
Right. And I want to clarify, and you correct me, Dustin, wherever I misspeak for you, but discernment for me is coming into that space knowing that there is some ambivalence on at least one partner. It's not when they have decided, because then there's not discernment. They've made up their mind, even though the other partner may not want that. If one partner has made up their mind, that's a different type of counseling that we can do in a couple's setting. But discernment is us really coming in and sitting in that space of ambivalence, really working through both as a couple and then individually the pros and cons, really weighing it out, where they see things have kind of gone south, what they would need to see to improve for them to stay in the relationship if they are willing to. And it is something that the idea of discernment is, it's short term, and then it helps us decide what direction are we separating as well as we can, or are we working to repair the relationship? And it kind of goes from there. Is that kind of how you do your discernment?
Absolutely. I don't think it's ever gone past 6 sessions, but it's, you know, something like that where it's, you know, you're meeting for an hour and a half, you're meeting them for one person for an hour, for 30 minutes, another person for 30 minutes, and then back together as a couple. And then you're kind of seeing what you're using that individual time and that back together time to help them make that decision. It's definitely more structured than typical couples therapy, and it's just not as emotionally vulnerable.
And I totally agree with that. I mean, we're always thinking about the safety of the client. So we don't want them to come into a space that it gets too vulnerable with somebody who's not able to show up for them in the way that they need to be shown up for. When it comes to your couple sessions, Dustin, mine are structured in a way, and I think you kind of alluded to, and I think you do something similar. First session is with the couple. Sometimes, depending on what's going on, I might have a second session with a couple, but the first session is with a couple. It's a lot of assessment going through their history. It tells me how they're showing up for one another, how they're interacting. And then the second session and third session I do with each of them individually. My fourth session then is kind of a report out treatment planning session on here's what I've seen, where I think we need to go. From there, it gets a lot more fluid. What does yours typically look like?
Typically, that first session, I'm looking at their goals are and what they're hoping to get out of this, what they're struggling with and how long that's been going on. I try to dabble in some of what they appreciate about each other so we can have some basis of where some of those positive interactions are that I can build on. But a lot of that is looking at, you know, who brings up conflict first and trying to figure out the patterns of their communication problems or conflict, which is 90% of, you know, the calls that I get. So in that, I'm not looking for a bad guy. I'm just trying to see what those patterns look like and make sure that I'm understanding so I can help develop that plan, you know, on that fourth session. So they feel like this makes sense going forward. And if they're both interested in that and both are willing to work on it, yeah, that's when we start.
Totally makes sense. What are some of the contraindications that you assess for in those early sessions that might rule out couples therapy? And it might be something that an individual clinician maybe even already is aware about that they should know might rule out couples therapy.
Yeah. I mean, I would say domestic violence, substance abuse, you know, child abuse. Again, we already mentioned kind of the desire to stay in the relationship, but I would say that those are the main ones that I'm looking for. It's helpful to have those questions set up, especially for those individual sessions, it gives us a chance to ask more about those. If I were hearing that as an individual therapist, those would be things that I probably wouldn't recommend couples therapy.
In my opinion, and you can jump in, agree, disagree here, these are the general contraindications for couples work, meaning enrichment and repair work where they both get deeply vulnerable. It doesn't mean there can be no couples format of work, but it's also not super cut and dry. In my opinion, there are things, particularly when it comes to addiction or if there were past incidences of abuse within the relationship, I'll look at and I'll say, okay, I might be willing to, with kind of some guardrails in place here, or, you know, I may be willing if somebody's gone through recovery, you know, they're, and of course that wouldn't be active addiction, even jumping into that, even though it may require that lens of addiction to go into. But what are your thoughts? Do you generally look at those things more as kind of a spectrum of areas that they have to be evaluated by the couples therapist? Or what are your thoughts there?
No, I really like your thinking there. And I would agree with what you're saying. I think there's really, what I see is there's not really a one size fits all, right? You could just say, well, okay, if this, then it's a hard path. I think really the indicators are more active, like if there's active ongoing domestic violence, active ongoing child abuse, active ongoing substance use. Those are the ones that put those red flags. There's always that place where talking to the couple and kind of assessing and kind of seeing where things are going. Everyone's a little bit different. People present differently with those issues. It's helpful to not just have a one-size-fits-all kind of approach. So that sounds like what you're saying. I totally agree with that.
Yeah, that is what I'm saying. And for me, it's helpful if a clinician is thinking about referring to me directly, or even if you're just saying, hey, you know, I know you're a couples therapist and can you give me some input on should I recommend couples counseling here? I'm happy to talk through those things to a consult. It is something where we're always looking at do no harm. And that's what these things come down to. Is we don't want to put people in a situation where they're going to be hurt. What are your thoughts if one person has made up their mind that they've decided they are ending the marriage, the other person likely is not quite there? What are your thoughts about where to go with that in a couples format?
Yeah, that's a great question. My first thought is, what are their goals and why would they want to come to couples therapy? Which would be my first thought. And I'm open to that. Are they looking to, they have kids and they're wanting to figure out how to separate well? Are they wanting to cut? Talk about co-parenting. It's definitely looking at those pieces to make sure that I could even be healthy. There's not that cookie cutter way of going about it.
Yeah, we need a lot of information. But I will say, I mean, I know myself, I do a lot of work with couples in that situation. It is not traditional couples therapy. It's really helping the person who's kind of left behind, who's been told the other person wants to leave, to come to deal with that and minimize any damage and help them do this as well as possible. In my opinion, oftentimes it's also pumping the brakes on the person who has made that decision and kind of normalizing the situation for them both, then helping them really see where this is at and looking at the bigger family. But, you know, we should mention that the more people you get involved, so when we start looking at the couple, we got two people, when we start looking at the family, we have a much larger system, it does become more complex. And so, like you said, it's not a podcast cookie cutter answer. It's really a, well, let me figure this out. But I don't think that it should be something that an individual clinician should say, well, I'm not going to even bother with couples counseling because if he's already made up his mind and this is already happening, then there's no reason to. It is something that couples counseling can be very helpful with. And you mentioned, too, co-parenting. That's another area. Anything that really requires two people, it's just we do very different things. We don't do emotionally focused therapy in those settings. So it's very different. When you do your assessments with a client, do you do a formal or do you do a little bit more of an informal assessment?
I do kind of an informal attachment history. So I don't do the, you know, full attachment questionnaire, but I'm definitely looking at who did they go to when they were upset growing up? What kind of messages did they get about themselves? What kind of things that were repeated, expectations, things like that, as well as, you know, conflict and how communication was handled. Those are those are really like kind of the main things I'm looking for. And then I'm trying to figure out how do they show up in their marriage, right? Because it's fresh on my mind, what they've just told me about their growing up, then it's easier to kind of start to piece together, oh, okay, well, here's how I see this thing from how you survived or functioned in your family that worked for you growing up, just not working for you now. And so I'm trying to figure out what are those things they're bringing in that causing the opposite of what they want to happen. It's more informal.
It's informal in that it sounds like it's not written. It is something that's more interview style, but it does sound like it does have a structure to it. And mine is that way as well. The first session, like I said, you know, looking at patterns, certainly couples history, have they rewritten history? How do they remember it? Really telling me where they're at with the relationship, listening for also traumas within the relationship that kind of stand out in their history. And then the individual sessions, I do go through a lot of the things you looked at. One of my favorite questions I always ask people, because I always ask them to tell me about the relationship that served as their model for relationships. So it may have been their parents' relationships. Oftentimes it may be a grandparent's, or it may even be somebody else who was a key figure when they were very, very young. But I do always point that out, going back to when they were very young, most commonly their parents' relationship. Even if their parents didn't have a relationship, that tells me something about how that influenced how they show up as a partner in the relationship. And then I will say, and I think, well, I shouldn't speak for you. I will say, I weave in and out of assessment throughout all of the counseling.
I was definitely thinking that. It's constantly assessing. You know, you mentioned your favorite question, and I really like, that's a great question. I'd like to know what those messages were, because I want to know what they're hearing when they're having conflict. When that person says, oh, you hurt feelings, are you thinking like, oh, I can't do anything right? And that usually comes from the internal family systems kind of showing up. But it helps. It really helps me kind of get a sense of how to interrupt some of those patterns, how they speak to themselves when they're in conflict.
I'm right there with you, Dustin. And I will say that if clinicians are looking to use a more formal assessment, I have used, particularly early on when I was practicing, I used the Gottman Couples Checkup Assessment, and it's four, I think 480 questions. It's very broad. It does go through everything. It also goes through all of the things that we would be cautious about. It is something that it's a very low cost assessment. I will throw that out there. So I think that if there are particularly newer clinicians or people who are newer to couples work, and it may feel like, wow, there's a lot of pieces of the puzzle together here, a formal assessment can really help with that quite a bit. And there are others too. That's just one I happened to use. If you were a new clinician and you were either working with a couple or you were thinking about referring to couples, when would you think, okay, I really need to consult with somebody or get some additional supervision about what's going on here?
Yeah, well, there's so many things that it's hard. I remember what it was like when I was asking all those questions. And I even look back through some of my old supervision notes. You know, a lot of it was really trying to get the structure of things. I like what you said about those assessments, because I had a template that I made from going through supervision. And the questions that I didn't ask, in some sense, I used that template that I created years ago that, you know, I have it as a PDF and I can write on it. But I think that if you're not sure, I think really the trickiest ones from what I remember was when it got into discernment or affair work. Those were the trickiest and maybe the scariest to navigate, because it's just a higher intensity of emotion at that point. You know, it's not just, hey, we've got this issue that keeps kind of rearing its head in all of these little areas of our life. These are big things. Those were the ones that I would definitely advise someone to seek supervision on, because those were the ones that I knew the least about. Those are the first one that comes to mind. What do you think?
I think you're spot on with those ones. I will say those are both trauma events for the relationship. So processing them, making sure that you're handling that in a very safe manner with the client, I think is really important. And they both can bring up a lot of self-therapist stuff, a lot of our own stuff that we may have, you know, judgments, we have opinions. We need to make sure that we're paying attention to any counter transference that may be happening there, certainly. I also think any of those things that may be contraindications, maybe there has been some abusive behaviors in the past that they're saying, well, now everything's good, but, you know, you need to talk that through. Same thing with addiction. I think that's a big one. Couples work can bring up a lot of self-therapist issues. And I think if you find yourself leaning towards one client, I mean, when you see a couple, should clarify this. When we see a couple, the relationship is our client. The individuals are not considered our client. The relationship is. The individuals are part. They're parts of our client. So if you find yourself really leaning towards one individual in a session, that is something to really bring to supervision. Make sure that, you know, you're processing through that and see that to make sure you're doing what's in the best interest of the client.
That's a good one to be mindful of, for sure.
I think one of the things, particularly if you're new to couples work, you're working systemically. You've got to maintain that systemic lens in the beginning. It can feel like there's a lot of pieces. And, you know, Dustin, I liked what you said there about, I had my list of things from supervision that were things that I would forget or didn't know and forget to ask. And you're not going to know everything. So things are going to come up in supervision that you may be like, I don't know. That's okay. That's part of it. But anything that just kind of grabs you is key. What do you think is the minimum information that if you are going to consult on a couple's case, and including if you're the individual clinician who's looking to consult with the couple's therapist, what are the minimum things that you need to bring to the table?
Yeah, and the case conceptualization. How are you seeing this couple? That's going to inform so much of the questions that you're going to need to know. I think that that's really probably the main things that come to my mind. If you're not sure how you're conceptualizing the problem and how to get to their goals, I think you're not going to ask the right questions in supervision.
I 100% agree. I think the conceptualization is so key whenever you're looking to consult. And I think one thing I want to mention too, that just kind of popped into my head as a couples therapist, that may be a little bit different, is I require a release from both of my clients for me to talk to somebody. And I tell them that in the very, you know, when we go over the informed consent. So if you get a release as an individual clinician from your client and they are part of my client, I need to also get a release from the other person as well before I can have the discussion, which is generally not an issue. But we do have to keep in mind that our client is a couple. Their client is an individual. The other thing I think that's really important with consultation, because we have to be cognizant, the lenses are a little bit different and we need to help to kind of see that. But I think there's benefits in the different lenses of the individual clinician and the couple's clinician. And the information that I share needs to be, and the information the individual clinician shares, in my opinion, needs to be the minimum information needed for us to work together, not an oversharing of kind of gossipy stuff. Minimum needed. To me, it's an ethical piece that I always look at. Like I said, just kind of popped into my head.
Well, it makes sense since you supervise much more than I do. You're doing supervision. You know the answer to that question.
Well, and you're right. It is something that I see, particularly newer clinicians, they want to go into a consult, basically dumping all the information to the other person. That may not be in the best interest of their clients. So keeping that minimum necessary is really key. Dustin, I think you've done a fabulous job. Is there anything else that in this area you think you want to add or it's important for clinicians to keep in mind?
I like what you said about just keeping in mind that counter transference piece. I don't remember taking sides. I definitely remember the stress of handling the conflict. That was worked out in supervision. But yeah, I definitely think that's a good one to keep in mind is if you feel yourself experiencing that counter transference, I think that's definitely really important.
Right. One of the things too that I heard, I was in a CE event for a fair recovery work, and somebody I think brought up personality disorders, and the person who was leading it, he said, you got to realize that if you're working with a couple who is in a fair recovery, it always looks like there's a personality disorder. It is very hard to discern that. And I think that's one of the pieces when we talk about countertransference, that something just jogged in my mind as you were saying that we do have to keep in mind that when we start seeing interactions We see the flare-ups. We oftentimes will see the ugliest pieces of the relationship, and we need to. That's important clinical information, but it may not necessarily be indicative of an individual diagnosis, even though it sure may look like an individual diagnosis just because of the pain that they're in.
Absolutely.
Great job. I really appreciate you coming on here and going through everything. You've done a terrific job. So thank you, Dustin.
Thank you, Jackie. Appreciate you having me on.
Music for this podcast has been provided by Audionautix.com. This podcast is purely informational and is not a replacement for supervision. Thank you for listening.